from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. The government is collecting the telephone records of millions of Americans, according to the British newspaper The Guardian. The Guardian broke that story last night, and in our first half hour, we'll explore what we know so far about what's behind that surveillance effort. And then we'll turn our attention to fire, a word not to be shouted in a crowded theater, but what about in a crowded state? Are we paying enough attention to fire danger? We'll hear what the fire season looks like so far around the state, and we'll explore the bigger questions about climate change and fire and what they pose for our future. It's all ahead on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson, and today for Michael Krasny. News that the United States government is collecting the phone records of millions of Americans is making waves this morning. The secret surveillance effort involves the phone records of Verizon customers and was approved under a controversial section of the Patriot Act. The British newspaper The Guardian broke the story last night, and so to learn more about what is going on, we're joined first by Ewan McCaskill, who is one of three reporters who worked on the story. Mr. McCaskill, thanks for joining us.
No, I'm glad to.
So let's go through this step by step, if we can, and have you start by telling us what exactly is being collected. These are records, but it doesn't mean the government is actually listening in on phone conversations. So tell us first what exactly has been collected.
You're exactly right. They're not listening into the phone conversations. What they're doing is they're able to get the records of when you made a call, how long it lasted, where you were when you made the call. Now, that's quite important in revealing information. You know, you can start to put together a picture of someone on that basis, and you cross-check it with other records. And, that's a startling amount of information to give away.
And tell us what we know about whether or not these are just the records of Verizon customers. And they're referenced in the articles that I've read as business record. Does that mean that people who have home Verizon accounts, not business accounts, those records were not collected? What exactly do we know about that?
Well, it's a bit fuzzy. But again, I think you're on the right track. Verizon overall has about 120 million customers. One of its groups is Verizon Business Services, which is where this court order applies to, and that has 10 million commercial lines. So it's a lot of people.
And what might you were saying before that just this basic information of where a call was made, the length of the call, begins to tell us something. What does it tell us? What is it that the government is actually looking for?
Again, it's not clear. I mean, the National Security Agency, along with its partners around the world, in Britain, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, they're hoovering up all this information, via satellite, by planes, vehicle goes around with antenna. So they're hoovering up all this information, something like, billions of calls being, hoovered out on a daily basis. Now, obviously, they're looking for any chatter about sort of terrorist attacks. But the problem is it's just become too wide-ranging. It's too intrusive. It's too overarching. I mean, you can see the point of why they want to track terrorists. You track down one, and using him, that leads you to other phone calls, and you track them, and you build up a network. But the idea of having this blanket authority to track the phone records of 10 million Americans, I just find it staggering.
And how is this practice or this particular story that you broke last night, what is different about it than what has been going on in the past, either under this administration or under the previous administration? Senator Dianne Feinstein of California said this morning that this is just an ongoing practice, that there's nothing necessarily startling about it. Your assessment, obviously, is much different.
Yeah, well, it's different in the this has gone through a series of variations since 9/11. Before 9/11, concern about this goes back to the 1970s when Senator Frank Church was concerned that the intelligence agencies were taking on too much power, and he warned about the kind of scenario we've got now. After 9/11, the Bush administration did away with some of the legal protections that you would no longer require a warrant in a lot of cases. The New York Times revealed this in 2006, and as a result of that, the warrants were put sort of back into place. What we didn't know was that the Obama administration is basically continuing with the Bush policy. The assumption was, Obama was elected on a platform of being more transparent and open, and then suddenly we'd find that he's doing exactly the same as the Bush administration. Dianne Feinstein probably knew this, but I don't think most of the public did.
Yeah. Ewan McCaskill joining us, a reporter for The Guardian newspaper, one of three reporters involved in reporting the story which The Guardian broke last night. Mr. McCaskill, stay with us, please. We're going to add into our conversation now Gregory Nojem. He is senior counsel at the Center for Democracy and Technology and the director of its project on freedom, security, and technology. Mr. Nojem, thanks for joining us as well.
Thank you.
So give us your sense of the importance of this story that The Guardian has broken. What is it about it that concerns you?
I think it's extremely important. And it is a surprise that the National Security Agency is collecting records about wholly domestic telephone communications. It appears that it is part of a program to use information about who is contacting whom to figure out who might be up to no good. The problem with the program at the very root is that it collects phone records about people with respect to whom there is no suspicion at all.
So
it collects all the customer records for this Verizon entity.
So is the net then as wide as the NSA wants it to be? There isn't any filter involved? These millions of records apply to you, me, whoever down the block?
The collection applies to anyone who is a customer of these entities that are listed in the order. They were all Verizon entities. I suspect that the customers of other companies are that their phone records are under similar orders, because it wouldn't make sense to think that the customers of one of the major carriers are more likely to be talking to terrorists than the customers of the others. We're talking about millions and millions of people. And again, the startling thing here is that the people whose records are being collected, there's no tie between them and terrorism. There's no tie between them and terrorists. They're collecting on everyone without having to show anything about them that is particular.
Ewan McCaskill, can you add anything to that as far as whether or not this may involve other phone providers beyond Verizon?
There's nothing I can add. We only had the one court order, so we don't know if AT&T or anyone else was involved. But I agree, it seems unlikely to me that this would just apply to Verizon, so I would assume that the others are involved as well. I'm pretty sure that this kind of intrusion extends across sort of wide areas. It goes beyond just the phone companies. One of the problems I have with this is lack of any sort of control by Congress over the NSA. I know that at least two senators regularly ask the NSA for the numbers that are targeted within America, and the NSA refuses to give even a sort of ballpark figure.
Yeah.
And yet I'm sure they must have those figures available.
Is this the? I think you're referencing Senators Udall and Wyden, who have been sort of sounding this alarm for a while. Gregory Nochem, I guess I'm curious about whether or not this, in your judgment, is just not something that we're focused on enough, that there are a couple of senators out there sort of raising this flag. Now The Guardian has broken this story. But in the main, There's a trade-off that perhaps many Americans are willing to make, and that's, of course, the trade-off between security and privacy. What's your sense of that?
I don't think that's what's going on here. What's the fundamental problem with this program is how secretive it is.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knew its breadth until The Guardian broke this story. We had an inkling about the program or something like it from the letters that Udall and Wyden sent to the NSA and to the Attorney General. But really, this is the first time that Americans have heard about this program. But I have to say, it is broader than the program that the Bush administration described as the terrorist surveillance program.
Hmm.
That program was about content, and that program targeted people who had suspected ties to terrorists. This is targeting everyone.
Let's open up our phone lines to everyone here in the Bay Area and see if people want to comment or have a question about this. You can get in your calls over the next 10 minutes at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can post your thoughts or comments on our Facebook page as well. Gregory Nochem, describe, please, the way in which this happens and who has authority over it. As I understand it, this sort of thing has to be authorized by something called the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, or FISA. And this is a provision within the Patriot Act. Can you describe this mechanism, please, and how this works, how you go about getting approval from FISA?
So the FBI applies for an order from this court. And the court has authority to issue orders for content. Those have a more demanding showing. These orders require only that the government show that there are, and I'm going to read from the statute, reasonable grounds to believe that the things sought are, quote, relevant to an authorized investigation to obtain foreign intelligence information or to protect against international terrorism or clandestine intelligence activities. That is a very broad authority. Authority to collect information to protect against something is much broader than authority to collect information about a crime, for example. So the statute is written in very broad terms. We had always thought, and I think Congress thought, that Section 215 surveillance required some level of particularity, some level of suspicion about a person. Hmm. This collection that has been revealed by The Guardian shows that that was incorrect. And I think that's what Senators Wyden and Udall were trying to warn us of, but that they couldn't because they were bound by the secrecy rule.
And that's part of what's so interesting about this is that you can't even be clear about what it is that's being done because those provisions are built in to what can be said and what cannot. And that's revealed in a way by The Guardian, by the comment from Verizon itself, which I will read in part, which says, "We have no comment on the accuracy of The Guardian newspaper's story or the documents referenced. Verizon continually takes steps to safeguard its customers' privacy. Nevertheless, the law authorizes the court to order a company to provide information, and if Verizon were to receive such an order, we would be required to comply." So they can't even really acknowledge whether or not it's true or not. So it's a pretty thick veil to pierce, Ewan McCaskill, right?
It is, yeah. I think that's the most important thing about all this. I mean, this is one particular story about Verizon, but it's much broader than that. It's about the growth of intelligence agency and the surveillance state. I understand why there's a need for surveillance. It's happened for centuries. It's not something new, but new technology has made it so all encroaching. And there needs to be at least some sort of congressional oversight of it, which doesn't seem to be happening.
Some comments coming in that people are observing. Colin writes, these records include information, which means they are, in effect, putting a trace on every Verizon cellular phone user who's not even suspected of anything. This puts a lie to the promise that the government's use of data is focused or restrained. Ken writes in, it's interesting how the Democrats and Republicans both rush, and I do mean run, to defend spying on Americans. And Will tweets, it's outrageous that Senator Feinstein is trying to play this off as business as usual. Let's get a comment on the phone from Peter in San Rafael. Peter, go ahead.
My comment is that if a car bomb goes off in Times Square, and what the NSA is doing right now could have prevented it. People are going to say, well, they could have prevented it. Why didn't they do something?
Yeah. Fair enough. Peter, Gregory Nojem, your response to that, because that is what I was trying to ask before, and Peter's put it more precisely. If the trade-off is one that prevents that bomb from going off in Times Square, is that not a trade-off worth making?
It's an imaginary trade-off, really. Why would anyone think that monitoring, for example, the call I'm doing right now would prevent a bombing in Times Square? I mean, it's what we need to do is to focus surveillance on people with respect to whom there is evidence that they might do the bombing in Times Square and not focus on everyone else. This surveillance is not about people who have contacted terrorists in the past. It is about everyone. And the thought that maybe if we surveil everyone, we might prevent a crime, first, it's not clear where that, why we think that that could actually help. But second, it's an incredible waste of resources and a diversion from actual crime fighting.
Peter, thanks for the call. Let's go next to Ali in San Francisco. Ali, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking the call. I had a question regarding prepaid plans that are not tied to any individual or person. I mean, I could go into a 7-Eleven today and buy a prepaid phone, and to my knowledge, I think these are the types of phones that are used by most folks trying to commit crimes or terrorist acts. So I was curious if there's any insight into anything that's being done to filter these prepaid plans or phones.
Ali, interesting question. Thank you. Ewan McCaskill?
Well, I would assume those kind of burner phones are sort of fairly safe. But having said that, I think the technology is so good now, I'm not sure that the surveillance services can't eavesdrop on just about anybody, anywhere, in any circumstances. So maybe all those people who think that using burner phones or encrypted emails or all the rest of it, maybe sort of fooling themselves. On the terrorism thing, is the argument that the White House is deploying now, saying that the NSA it's necessary to conduct these kind of surveillance sweeps in order to protect America from terrorists. But to some extent, since 9/11, the terrorist threat has been over-exaggerated, and the reaction doesn't really respond to the threat anymore. You get sort of small groups of homegrown terrorists, and this applies in Britain and Europe as well as America. I'm not sure it requires this sort of level of surveillance. I'd be more frightened of the level of surveillance than I am of what are basically criminal attacks.
Yeah. Gregory Nojem, I know you have to leave us in 30 seconds or so. So let me just get a last comment from you about why people ought to be concerned. You heard Peter's concern about the potential of a bomb in Times Square. Come back on that once more about why you think this actually is of a deeper concern.
It's that surveillance of everyone all the time is chilling. It makes it so people feel less free to do what they want to do with confidence that they're not being tracked, that their associations aren't being logged by a government entity that has no suspicion about them at all. It really is a question about the kind of country we want to live in. Is it one where we're all being watched just in case one of us might do something wrong? Or is it one that actually focuses investigative authority on the real potential wrongdoers? I hope it's the latter. And I think that we need a change in this statute to make sure that that model is preserved.
Gregory Nojem is the senior counsel at the Center for Democracy and Technology. Thanks for adding your perspective this morning.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We have time to take a call or two more. You can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. John in Oakland is next. John.
Oh, good morning. I was just hoping we might discuss, I think we're already really touching upon the main issue, which is the Dragnet surveillance and, you know, the eventual metadata extrapolations we can make on patterns and different behaviors and how it really, I'm an intelligence army myself, how that really doesn't work. There's no way, even with this massive data warehouse facility we've built in Utah for the NSA, to funnel that into any actionable intelligence in a timely fashion. But I guess what I'm really getting at eventually is that lack of individualized suspicion. What's the prescription here to turn this around? I mean, with the fealty in federal courts and the Supreme Court really just unwilling to touch this on the constitutional grounds, I mean, what other way to challenge that Fourth Amendment individualized suspicion that we don't see? I mean, how are we going to be able to turn this around aside from changing any statute or law?
John, thanks for the call. If you would, Ewan McCaskill, respond to the first part of John's observation that from his standpoint, as someone who's worked in intelligence, all this so-called metadata doesn't necessarily give you anything that's actionable, to use another word that's tossed around in these conversations. You began our conversation earlier, though, by suggesting that you can learn something. So what is possible to glean from this kind of data collection?
I think that was quite a stunning statement, you know, that someone who's involved in this, you know, says that, you know, actually you don't get much actionable intelligence from it. So that undermines the whole argument for the NSA, you know, having this sort of blanket coverage. I was thinking more in terms of the outline that I mentioned earlier of where you have one suspected terrorist and you sort of you have surveillance on his phone and you see who he contacts and you build up a network of his contacts and friends and colleagues so I can see the sort of the usefulness of that. Can I just mention one point as a journalist?
Just briefly if you would, because we're just about out of time, but just a last quick point.
There's this furore in Washington over the last few weeks about, you know, trying to find journalists and who they're linked to. As a result of the surveillance, they can find out whoever I speak to now. They've accessed my phone records, who I spoke to, when, location, duration of the call. They don't need to leak inquiries anymore. They can track who I speak to and every other journalist in the country, and that can apply to other professions.
Yeah.
So it seems to go way beyond just sort of terrorism.
Including the fact that you made the call to be on this program this morning. For that, we thank you, and thank you for your reporting work as well. Ewan McCaskill from The Guardian newspaper joined us along with Gregory Nojem, senior counsel at the Center for Democracy and Technology. We must take a break. When we return, we will turn to the subject of fire. That's coming up next on Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. This is Forum on KQED.